Hello, and welcome to the Physical Preparation Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Robertson, and I'll be joined on the line later today by Brett Utley. Now, before we get into this week's episode, real quick, just want to give you a warm and sincere Happy New Year. Hope you enjoyed yourself. Hopefully it was a safe and fun time with family and friends. And man, I don't know about you, but I'm looking to make 2019 just an amazing year. I've got some really aggressive goals for myself, personally, professionally, in the gym. And man, I hope you're there with me. I hope you're ready to hustle and grind your way to an awesome 2019. Now, we'll get back to the weekly recaps next week. Unfortunately, just the way with timing and everything else, I've had to kind of crank these out a little bit. But the little monologue that I want to cover for this week, I think, is incredibly important and very, very pertinent to getting the most out of 2019. Because whether we know it or not, we're all creatures of habit, right? And creatures of routine. And, you know, one of the best books that I've probably ever read is actually called The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg. And what a lot of us would probably think, and what I probably thought leading up to this point, is that, you know, certain things in our life, we just do, right? Like if you're a smoker, you just smoke. If you, are an avid exerciser, you just exercise. But what Mr. Duhigg explains in this book is that there's really this sequence, right? There's a cue, there's a routine, and then there's a reward. So let's say, for instance, and this is probably an awful example for a fitness podcast, but let's say somebody smokes, right? And they just know that after they have a meal, they have a cigarette, okay? So this exact template kind of follows suit here, okay? So the cue, in this case, is the fact that they have a meal, right? So after they have a meal, then they have this routine of, I've just ate a meal, now I'm going to have a cigarette, okay? And then the last piece is, hey, you know, my reward is I feel good. I get this little buzz or whatever, you know, kind of reward they feel like they get out of it. Okay. So my point behind all this is that when a new year comes around, we're always looking at ways to better ourselves and we want to improve our habits or we want to set new goals. But what happens and what most people don't understand is that you can't just get rid of a bad habit. So again, coming back to the idea of smoking, you know, you don't just quit smoking, right? What you have to do is you take a bad habit and you have to replace it with a new habit, okay? So basically, in that little system there, you have to change the routine, okay? So I want to give you a personal example. Luckily, it's not quitting smoking. But one of the things that I've noticed over the last, say, 2 to 3 months of 2018, and I was busy, I had a lot going on. Just this year for me has been challenging from a professional standpoint because, man, I've been trying to push the envelope on RTS. I've been trying to make wholesale changes within the walls of iFast. I've had probably my most robust coaching load that I've had in the last couple of years in 2018. So one of the things that I'd really gotten away from was my little Con Ed routine. And look, guys, this is something I've done literally since I graduated in 2002 with my master's degree. I'd always carved out time for Con Ed. And again, just these last couple months, what had ended up happening was I would work, I'd come home, have family time. When the kids would go to bed, maybe I'd jump on the gram or Twitter, social media for a little bit, get ready for bed, and then I'd probably just watch a show on Netflix, you know? I was into all kinds of different shows. I watched Bloodline for a while. I watched like all 3 seasons of that. Obviously, all of the Marvel Avenger shows, or the Defenders shows, excuse me, loved all those. And honestly, it was to the point where I didn't want to get started on something new, so I'd like go back. So before Daredevil season 3 came out, I watched all of Daredevil 1 and 2 to kind of get myself ready. Oh, and the Defenders in between, to get myself ready for season 3. So I just kind of gotten in this bad habit or this bad routine. So instead of just saying, well, I'm just not going to watch Netflix anymore, I had to plug in a new routine, right? So in my case, the cue was, okay, the kids are in bed. I've taken 10 to 15 minutes to unwind. Now my new routine, instead of popping on a Netflix show, is to do my Con Ed. So the last couple of weeks here, I've been just kind of going through all of Lee Taft stuff. And Lee is one of those guys where you can watch everything that he does, and maybe he says something different in one video versus another, or he's evolved and tweaked his system a little bit. And so I'm constantly learning from him, and I'm constantly making my own skill set a little bit better. Okay? So this has been one of those things where it's made a huge impact. Instead of just saying, I'm not going to watch Netflix, I've slid in the new habit of, hey, and really it's the old habit, but it's getting back in the habit of doing that Con Ed on a nightly basis. So this is something I'd love for you to start thinking about, right? If you're trying to change some habits, get out of some what you would consider to say bad habits in 2019, that's great. How are you going to kind of break this cycle? What cues are you going to use? What routines are you going to break up? And this is a really important one as well. What is the reward, right? And this is something that I think a lot of times as coaches and trainers, we're bad about, right? We love the hustle. We love the grind. We love being in the gym, whatever the case may be. But from a personality perspective, we have to be okay with rewarding ourselves. For me, the reward is, hey, now when I go out on the floor, I'm a more competent coach, right? So now when I'm seeing somebody do something in their speed session, it's like, oh, I know what to do. Okay, but sometimes it's not just that, right? Like sometimes you need a more powerful stimulus. Like if it's a financial goal that you're trying to work towards, hey, maybe it's not just socking away all that money into saving. It's saying, hey, I'm going to take a little chunk of this and spend it on myself on something that I want to do. I'm going to take my significant other out on a date. You know, all of the details are up to you. But the main point here is you can't just get rid of a bad habit. If you want to make 2019 your best year ever, you have to find ways to get not just get out of bad habits, but replace them with good habits. And if you guys haven't read the book Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg, I can't recommend it highly enough. It will absolutely change the way you think about habits in general, and most importantly, how we actually change our habits for the better over the course of our lifetime. So guys, that does it for me. We'll take a quick break, and we're going to jump into this show with Brett. Born and raised in Rhode Island, Brett Utley is the first assistant coach for the Rio Grande Valley Toros of the United Soccer League, who are the second team of the Houston Dynamo in Major League Soccer. Prior to this, he was the fitness coach for the Seattle Sounders reserve team and the USL Pro, in addition to being the head coach for the Seattle Sounders U13 Academy team. In 2015, he earned an MBP for Masters in High Performance Soccer in Barcelona, Spain, while also receiving a master's in science in soccer coaching via Ohio University. In this show, Brett and I talk quite a bit about tactical periodization, including what it is and how you can use it to improve practice design, why understanding roles is so critical in team sports performance, and the importance of athletes understanding the model and style of play that the coach wants to see. In one part of the show, Brett talks about how to create drills that give context to athletes. And if you look at the website, there's a diagram to help you better understand what he means. Regardless of whether you're a soccer fan or not, I think there's something in this show for everyone. But enough from me, let's do this. Brett, man, thanks so much for coming on the show here today. Really excited to chat with you. Could you start by just telling us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure, Mike. It's great to be on, and thanks for having me. I grew up in Rhode Island. I grew up as a soccer player, and then I went to college at Quinnipiac University in Connecticut. And then afterwards, I progressed on and play relatively low level in Sweden, which was a really great experience for me.
Yeah.
And then I delved right into coaching, kind of when I realized that I couldn't really take the game any further as a player. So then I began back at Quinnipiac University, where I went to school as an assistant coach there. And then I kind of jumped off, I guess, that track, and I became aware of a coaching program in Barcelona, Spain. So I went there in 2015 for 4 months, which was an unbelievable experience. At the conclusion of the course, I was fortunate to join the Seattle Sounders as a fitness coach with the second team, and then move on, I guess, 6 months later within the organization as well to coach the under-13s, which was a really great experience dealing with youth development and that sort of thing. At the conclusion of the 2016 season, I joined the Houston Dynamo, and I'm currently working as an assistant coach with their USL Pro team called the Rio Grande Valley Toros.
That's awesome, and man.
That's where I am today.
That's awesome, man. And what kind of led you into this world, or what sparked your interest? I mean, obviously you had an interest because you were already a pretty high level athlete, but you know, like, what really got you excited about moving into the world of physical preparation?
Yeah, I mean, I guess like a lot of different people, I was brought to it because I was injured as an athlete. I suffered two torn ACLs as a player in college. And because I spent so much time doing rehab, that I just naturally grew to want to know more about it, you know, how to prevent things. But obviously soccer was my first passion. And then once I delved into coaching and started studying with different licenses and all that, I realized that it was going to become super valuable that as a coach, when you're executing a training exercise on the field, you should more or less understand, you know, what are the physical requirements of that exercise and what are the demands being imposed to the players. And that was kind of ultimately what, I guess, my why to why I began studying strength and conditioning and physical preparation and ultimately the CSCS.
That's awesome, man. It's awesome to see. Because you described yourself before we started, you're more of a soccer coach, at least at heart, right? So it's cool to see a soccer coach that's actually interested in the physical, physiological side of things, because I feel like, you know, younger guys are, but I don't necessarily know that a lot of the older coaches are as interested in that.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I just think, you know, I was fortunate early on when I started coaching that, and specifically when I went to Barcelona, that the training methodologies that I was learning from Europe, in particular, structured training and tactical periodization, those were kind of the two methodologies that we were learning on the course that I was in. And it's almost like because they deal with the idea of complex systems, everything's kind of intertwined and working within, I guess you would say, reciprocal action. Mm-hmm. So it's very difficult to take one aspect away because, I mean, on the very basis, you know, the game of soccer is its tactics, its technique, its psychological, and its physical. So, but I think that's just more so how, I guess, education has evolved over the years with kind of understanding the sports from a more holistic perspective.
Yeah, you definitely see us moving away from this reductionist approach to creating training programs or, you know, practice sessions and all that. That's for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
So let's start really basic. And I love to just kind of get a feel when I'm working with, say, a sport-specific coach like soccer. When it comes to getting an athlete ready to play the game, what are your philosophical big rocks?
The first one is, does the player understand their role within the confines of the team? I think that's a big one. Do they understand the team style of play? Because, you know, you could take a very, you know, successful individual and just chuck him into a new environment and they may or may not be successful even though they have those individual qualities in isolation. Mm-hmm. So, and then from there, I guess you move on to the, you know, the physical side. Can they handle the demands of their position? Can they handle the demands of the game? And then obviously I look within myself and understanding what the training program is and saying, are we actually preparing these players to have the ultimate success in the match? And that's kind of where I guess you could say we take a deeper look within what we're doing in training to make sure that we're hitting those big buckets of the tactics, the technique, the physicality, and also can they deal with the emotional, cognitive side of the game when, you know, in our environment anyway, a lot of these kids we're dealing with are first year pros. So a lot of times from a cognitive standpoint, they're quite overloaded because it's their first time where they're dealing with playing the game for a living. And it's a lot different playing the game for a living and trying to make it a living than it is to, you know, when you're playing maybe on the youth side or playing and representing your university, which there's definitely pressure within that. But when you're relying to put food on the table for yourself playing the sport, the demands become a lot different.
It's a really interesting point because it's something that I think I've taken for granted over the years as I've had guys coming through with, say, the Indy 11. You know, you just, it's so hard for a lot of these young men that I've worked with to recognize the fact that, like, you're not the big dog anymore. You know, so many of these guys, and it happens at every level, right? When the star from high school goes to college, and I've seen that, and I've seen it when the star at college goes to the professional level, like, you just really can't comprehend how much higher the level of play is until you get there and you're seeing it every single day.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess we're fortunate as well that within our environment, because we're the second team for Houston, we spend, like this year, for instance, we'll go up there and we'll begin preseason with the first team. So for our guys coming, you know, a lot of them went through a whirlwind of, like, take last year, for example. Some of these guys were very successful in college. They went very deep into the NCAA tournament. They're trying to get into the MLS Combine. Okay, they checked that box. They do well in the MLS Combine. Maybe some of these guys that we had, they get drafted, didn't get signed by the team that drafted them. They kind of bounced around and found their way to whether it's a USL team, a USL, an MLS second team. And then, bam, they go into preseason. And all of a sudden on the third day, I think it was the third or fourth day, we played against the first team and they just smacked us. And it's almost like, okay, this is, now it's becoming real. And you kind of get a taste immediately, like, okay, this isn't college anymore. This is the next level. Obviously I'm at the next level of from college, but then there's another level after me, at the level that they're currently at. So, it's just a whirlwind of emotions, and I found this is my, I just finished my third season as working with an MLS second team, and you realize that almost it's probably more important to help the players deal with that emotional rush rather than the technical tactical side immediately, just to kind of handle all the different the different situations they're dealing with currently in their life.
Yeah.
Because it's been a whirlwind for them.
That's for sure. So let's talk a little bit about tactical periodization. And it's something that I'm obviously, well, not obviously, I'm loosely familiar with because I know, you know, a lot of the coaches that I've worked with have experience with it. A lot of the colleagues that I've chatted with in the soccer community are familiar with it. But let's start really basic here because I don't think a lot of people understand or even familiar with the term tactical periodization. So let's start real basic. Number one, what is it? And number two, how would you describe it to someone who either just very loosely follows soccer or maybe somebody that's not into soccer at all?
Yeah, I guess a very basic way to describe it would be if you're the head coach, you're kind of asking the question, how can I operationalize my style of play within the team that I'm currently coaching? And it's a training methodology of how to do that. And then from there, it's based on, for starters, it's based on the game model that you have as a coach. And there's obviously many factors that go into designing a game model. But some of the big blocks would be, you know, what's your vision for the game? What's your idea? How do you see the game? Do you see it more counterattacking? Do you see it more expansive with possession and then quick transitions to recover the ball back? And then from there, you're also looking at within the culture of your community, what's the history of the club? What are the players that you have at your disposal? And then from there, you're kind of trying to always morph the game model to, I guess, to best, to have the team best express themselves and ultimately have the most success. And then from there, I kind of look at it as there's four main, I guess you could say, methodological principles that the methodology follows. And the one would be specificity when you're training. So maybe you're focusing specifically on the moment of transition from defense to offense. So you always want to make sure your principles of play are current and being utilized within that specific training session. And then the next one would be the principle of propensities is what they refer to it as. So some people could refer to it as repetition without repetition. So you're designing these exercises with situations that repeat themselves over and over. So the players are able to understand that basic principle of play within the structure of the game. So you have opposition, you have your teammates, you're maybe within the same zone of the field that that's going to occur. And then the other one would be complex progression. That's the third principle of the methodology, where you're basically starting from simple and more, and over time making your way to dealing with more complex exercises to truly transmit and to bring the best out of the team. And then the other one is the physical side, kind of what I referred to before, would be the principle of horizontal alternation. And that's basically, there's three acquisition days when you're looking at the microcycle, or the morphocycle is how they refer to it in tactical periodization. And that begins with a strength session. So that's, you're dealing with the sub principles, and then you move into the following day, which is your main principles. So that's going to be more your endurance. That's going to be larger sided games to kind of get more of that high speed running. And then the final day of the acquisition days is speed, where you're kind of focusing on speed of decisions, speed of action, and that's your sub principles guide that particular physical quality, I suppose you would say.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. So again, to help people better understand, because you've kind of given the broad framework, like let's say just a normal week, right? Saturday match to Saturday match. How does that look? Like, you already talked about microcycles, so I'd love to just dig into that. Like, how would that look as far as setting up that week? So you play a match Saturday. How does that kind of pan out to get you to that next match on the next Saturday?
On the next Saturday? Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I've read a lot of different things within tactical periodization, and there's, they would say that you need to follow the morphocycle proposed by the methodology to actually be utilizing it. So according to tactical periodization, you would say, yeah, you play on that Saturday, you would do a recovery session. You do it off the following day, a recovery session the following day. So that would be on the Monday, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday would be those acquisition days that I described. Friday would be kind of your activation in preparation for the game, and then Saturday you would play again, is basically how you how that morphocycle or microcycle would flow.
Okay. Now, it's so interesting, because I feel like this is one of those great debate points in soccer as well, is, you know, like, when do you take the recovery day? When do you take the off day? And I feel like there's so many different ways you can rationalize it. I feel like there's so many different coaches I know that are doing different things and still having success. So I always like to dig in there and see kind of how people are laying out the microcycles and what they're having success with.
Yeah, for us, I mean, obviously everything, like you said, is so contextual to your environment. And, you know, for instance, if we play on a Saturday night in, say, in Sacramento, and then we are flying back early Sunday morning, then that Monday still is kind of that, even though Sunday is that kind of, you're kind of off, but you're traveling almost 1,500 to 2,000 miles across the country. So how much of that is actually recovering is probably putting more stress on your system.
Yeah.
So then you kind of have to focus that Monday training. It's still kind of that mixture of recovery / kind of get the guys that didn't really play, get them some training minutes. So when we're home anyway, we like to train the following day, because we found with our group that if they don't play, then we can kind of coordinate a game against an academy team that we have in the area as well, to kind of get them minutes, so we kind of can keep more or less the team within the same flow of the week. Because when we found that when we're dividing up the team, say we played a game on a Monday with the recovery guys, well, now they're going to need a couple days to recover, and now they're going to be, you know, not in balance with the rest of the team. So there's so many different ways, like you said, you could do it. It's just a matter of what works for your environment, and honestly, reading the players, and maybe they're crushed, and maybe they just need to go away, and I guess the phrase is, it depends.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. So the next thing I want to cover is where you kind of give me a little bit of insight into the four phases of the game, especially as it applies to tactical periodization, and why they are so important within the context of tactical periodization.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the game model starts everything. It's like I said, like I mentioned before, it's the vision. It's how you want the team, how you want your team to interpret the game. And kind of how I described it to myself when I was writing an article for my website about it. And it's just kind of, you want your team to interpret the game in the same language. And so if you think of the principles as behaviors you want the team to elicit, they need to actually understand them and feel them and experience them. And then once you're able to transmit that to the team, now you're going to give more order within the flow of the game, because soccer is so, it's so unpredictable.
Yes.
And so the more the game model is kind of their guide to, yeah, to make it, I guess, a bit, to reduce the uncertainty that they're experiencing, for me, is the way that I describe it. And then when you train with specificity with regards to the game model, now they're experiencing those principles over and over again. And so when they come into the game, they're able to more or less, their actions are not random, and their teammates are able to, able to execute the more or less the same actions or have the same type of behaviors. I think it was Mourinho that said, I read in a book once, that he said his dream was that if he were to stop a game at any particular moment, that all 11 players on the field were going to have the same thought, which yeah. I found to be super, super cool, because that's, you don't want six players thinking one thing and five players thinking the other. Otherwise, the team's going to be, it's going to be even more chaotic than what the game is already. And those, like you mentioned, the four moments, those are just, I guess, the four main situations that the team needs to understand. And then obviously you can break that down into further sub principles. But those are just the phases of the game that, or the moments of the game that occur all the time.
Yeah. I think that's just such a unique way to look at things, because probably the two sports that I followed the most growing up were football and basketball.
Yep.
If you've ever played those sports, there's really, like, there's breaks in the action, first of all,
yep.
you know, to kind of collect yourself and organize yourself. But more importantly, there's a lot of scripting going on, right? It's not like
yeah.
in football, you just send the quarterback out there and say, I'll try something.
Exactly.
You know, like yeah. everything is scripted. The same way in basketball, there's more in room for interpretation there, and guys can isolate, go through isolation plays and that sort of thing. But a lot of times a coach is calling a play and you're executing a play from set positions. Whereas, you know, in soccer, you've got literally 11 guys. Like you said, there is some level of, I guess, cohesiveness, hopefully. But that's yep. what tactical periodization is really trying to do. It's, you might be in this state of disorder, at least to start. Yep. But once you get the ball, there's a set thought process that everybody's trying to execute. Or if you lose the ball, there's a set thought process that everybody's like, okay, now I'm going to do this. And yep. that's fascinating to me, because that's something, until I was around the game more and until I saw practices executed, I just yep. never would have thought of that. You know, it's just not something, I think if you're not around the soccer world, you never think of it through that lens of, I mean, literally there's very little structure unless a coach is imposing that and trying to dictate that on a daily basis with regards to their practice sessions.
Yeah, and I think that's I definitely agree with you, and that's one of the, I guess it's, you know, soccer is obviously a very player-centered sport, because like you mentioned, there's no timeouts, there's halftime, maybe there's a water break, because it, like for us in South Texas, it gets really hot down here. So depending over a certain temperature, there'll be a water break, whether it's maybe at the 30th minute and maybe the 75th minute, something like that. And you can maybe quickly go over some small situation, but for the most part, you know, you're relying on the players to trust their training, to trust, I guess, trust the process that we're trying to implement within them. And at the end of the day, they're the ones that are making the decisions on the field. You know, the only other aspect or moment of the game would be the set pieces, like corner kicks, throw-ins, yep. that type of thing, that you kind of have more set plays. But even then, sometimes if you scout an opponent, maybe they have a different setup on a corner kick, and maybe the play that you spent all week going over, maybe it doesn't work.
Right.
Because their organization is different. So just, I guess it ties back to one of those, the earlier question that you asked me about, what are the first building block within the team? And can the player solve situations collectively and individually? And I think that's such a huge, huge piece to it. And I think that's what I feel when you're looking at the idea of what I mentioned before, the propensities within one of the main mythological principles of tactical periodization is when they're in that environment, when they're in that situation over and over again, there's going to be no situation is going to be the same. So even though more or less the behaviors will be quite similar, maybe the action or maybe the movement's different or maybe their perception is going to be a little bit different. And so from there, they're going to be able to truly understand the situation from multiple lenses, which I think only is going to help them have more success within the game.
Yeah, it's just the more you watch, the more you realize how complex of a game it really is, you know, and the level of thought that goes into really creating a team that is cohesive and that plays well together. And, you know, I think even if you're not super into the game, like if you can just understand like kind of what's going on, it gives you a whole nother lens to kind of to look at it through and to watch a game and just realize, wow, all 10 of these guys, excluding the goalie, are to some degree on the same page and thinking something similar to try and, you know, make things go in their favor. It's just really exciting and fun to watch, I think, the more you understand it.
Yeah, definitely. For sure. There's no doubt about it.
So now that we have an idea of what tactical periodization is, let's kind of get down to some brass tacks applied stuff. How do you take those moments and take these ideals and apply it to an actual practice session?
I guess that's the art of it as well. And one of the things that we kind of did a lot this year was trying to combine, to create situations within training that maybe isolate a specific situation. So you're kind of getting that repetition of it and then having that flow into a normal game. So for instance, one of the ways we did it this year, and it was on our main principal day when we're doing, it was about a 11 versus 11 exercise, but we zoned off the field in certain ways. So, and we restricted the first zone. So by restricting the first area, we were getting a lot of repetition of our middle block defending. So defending more or less in the middle third of the field. And then once the attacking team was able to progress through the middle block defending, now the game became completely live. And then it was just a normal game. And we said, okay, if the ball goes out over one of the end lines, so over the end line by one of the goals, then it restarts from that first situation that we wanted to see again.
Yeah.
So by doing that, the players, I want to say maybe every 90 seconds to 2 minutes, the players were experiencing that same situation, and you can coach very specific details of that moment of the game, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so by doing that, the players were obviously understanding the tactical side of things, but from the physical side, they're also getting, they're becoming exposed to the demands of the game, because after that maybe 15 to 20 second initial starting phase of the activity, it became a normal 11 versus 11 game. So they were getting their high speed running. They were getting their specific movements that they had to be trained that day. And they played regular throw-ins. So what I found this year was, when we're designing those types of exercises, it's okay, what's the specific action that we're, or the specific moment we're trying to train? And then how can we have it flow into a normal game so the players feel the, I guess, the experience they would have in a regular game? So it's, I guess you could say it's a pretty complex process, and that's why you need to have so clear the game model first, because from there you can design training exercises that are specific not only to your game model, but how you might have to change one or two things depending on the opponent that you're going to play in the following game.
Yeah. I mean, and if you're listening at home, I think one of the big things that you have to keep coming back to, and I know you mentioned it a couple of times, Brett, is truly understanding the game model or the style of play, right? I mean, that's how other sports describe it. But it's like, if you don't understand the style of your team, of how you want to play, if you don't have a really strong vision for how that is, then you're really going to struggle in this environment. Because again, every team, it doesn't matter, football, basketball, soccer, every team has a different vision. And something that you mentioned earlier on, I thought was really interesting, and I know you mentioned it in one of your articles as well, is it's not just how you want to play now, but sometimes this is predicated on the history of the club. So when I think about football, I always come back to like the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're kind of well known for being a physical running based team. And they still, I mean, yeah, they throw the football now, but they're still very well known for that, you know, and that was something that was built 30 or 40 years ago. So I think that's a really interesting element of it as well is, you know, a lot of times from the top down organizationally, there's a philosophy and then they're going to find a coach that's going to adhere to that philosophy and it kind of trickles down. So I think that's a really interesting element of it as well.
Yeah. And to kind of, I guess, add something to that is with our situation right now, because we're the second team for Houston, we obviously need to play relatively similar to the first team of what's going on in Houston. However, we're 4 hours away from Houston and we're about, about 15 minutes from the Mexican border. So a lot of the people from the Valley, they relate really closely to the Mexican League. Like if you were to ask people from here, you know, who's your favorite team? They're going to say Monterrey. They're going to say Tigres, who is in the city that's about 2 hours from us in Mexico. So when they see us play, even though we're the Houston second team, some of our game, the fans become excited when they're seeing maybe high pressing up the field with quick transitions. Yep. So that's we understand that's the market that we're in. However, we can never lose sight of the fact that pretty much our jobs are predicated on how many players are getting promoted to the first team.
Yes.
So it's such a fine balance, but luckily we have, within the city and the club, we have very, very similar values when it comes to that type of style of play.
Well, I think too, then it gets to almost the bigger kind of overarching theme of how do you have a theme for the way that you want the team to play, but still allowing for the individualization, right? Or the flair that is unique in soccer and allowing each guy to kind of work within the script, so to speak, but still allow him to be an individual and play in a way that he's comfortable in. So, I mean, there's so many elements to it that I think are fascinating.
Definitely, yeah.
So Maurizio Sarri of Chelsea in the English Premier League recently made waves when he said that he had banned his players from lifting weights in season. And I'm curious because you've got a really broad and extensive background. You claim to be a soccer guy, but you've been around physical preparation coaches. So I'd love to know kind of your thoughts here and where you feel strength training should maybe play a role in the training of your athletes.
Yeah. And in my opinion, I mean, it's super important. It's one of those building blocks that, you know, as we all know, kind of helps create resiliency within the athlete. And to be honest, I mean, I watched what Mauricio Sarri said a couple times, and I don't know, I've never known anyone to study with him or understand his reasons why for what he's saying. But I guess on the broad perspective of things, it's not something that I would be a proponent of, simply because I guess my own history as well as a player that came injured, and I didn't really know a whole lot about my body at the time when I was a young player. And oftentimes I go back and say, man, if only I knew this or if only I knew that. And it was funny, I was listening to Vincent Kompany. He was saying something, I was listening to it last night, and he kind of spoke about the importance of strength and conditioning within his life and how important he felt it was to players to have the gym process be one of the kind of their daily habits to kind of help take care of their bodies for professional soccer. And I'm kind of in completely agreement with him with that, because it's not more important than anything else. It's not less important. It's just, for me, I see the game as that holistic sport, and it takes psychological concentration. It takes physical strength. It takes, you know, obviously tactical intelligence. It takes, you know, the art of the technique. It's everything. So if you want to be successful, obviously players there's going to be certain ones that prioritize, maybe if you're a center back, maybe you are going to prioritize more the physical side of the game if your technique isn't as good as your physical side, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of how the player kind of optimizes their structures and how they can best express themselves to have success on the field. A friend of mine once told me, he said he was working within professional baseball, and he made a statement saying that baseball players don't make the big leagues by being in the training room, meaning the athletic training room.
Yeah.
And if you're injured, you can't play. And if you can't play, you're not going to be able to showcase yourself. And that's, I guess, a pretty basic thought process that I have within the whole process of things. I presume, he's been obviously a super successful coach, Mauricio Sarri. I'm sure he has his own reasons for it. I just don't know enough about him to say, that comment makes sense within what he's doing or within the structure of the sport in general.
Yeah. And not to put you on the spot with that. So I hope you didn't feel like I did.
No.
It's one of those things where, I did a whole podcast on it. It's like, are there ways you could probably work around using weights? Probably. But there's just so many levels to it, right? So in the day and age that we're in now, people see that headline and they immediately have a reaction, versus like thinking it through and thinking about all the things that could play into it. And if you're a young 20 something guy, maybe you can get away with that, and not have any repercussions. And maybe the repercussions don't happen until later in the year. Maybe they don't happen until years down the line. Maybe there's no repercussions at all. Like, these are the things that we love to debate about. But I'm just always interested to hear other guys' thoughts on this and what role kind of the weight room and just strength training in general plays with their athletes.
I guess, too, something that I just thought of it. I know, for instance, a lot of the books on structured training or tactical periodization are obviously, whether they're initially in Spanish or initially in Portuguese, I was thinking maybe Mauricio Sarri, the language barrier could be a thing where, say, for instance, I have no idea about this, but maybe the Chelsea gym is filled with K boxes and VersaPulley machines.
Right.
And for him, maybe that's not a weight, but we do know that's a form of resistance strength, and you can do, a whole host of different exercises with it. So maybe that could be a factor. I really don't know, but it could be something to consider within, before kind of getting all worked up with regards to what he's actually, what he actually said.
Yeah, absolutely. Context is just so important in that case. Yeah. And unless you're there, you just really don't know all the possible factors and all the possible things that are going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, my guy, it is time for the big question. If you could alter the space-time continuum and give young Brett Utley one piece of advice about training and or life, what would it be?
I would say optimize your game intelligence first about the sport and then work back from that. So I was one as a player that I always prioritized the physical side of stuff, and I'm a whopping 5'7", maybe 155 pounds. So that was never going to be that was never how I was going to have success, I guess, as a player. So I wish I spent more time studying the tactical side of things as a younger player, and that's something that I try to instill within the players that I'm currently coaching.
Love it. Love it, man. All right. So last but not least, we're going to do our lightning round. So I got four questions for you. Your answers can be as short or as long as you'd like. All right.
Sounds good.
All right, man. Number one, what's your career highlight so far as a coach or clinician?
I would say just overarching, I've been fortunate enough to be a part of some players' careers that have gone on to sign first team contracts, and seeing their excitement for achieving something like that in their life is something that I guess that helps give me motivation every day. And it kind of reminds you of the bigger picture of why we're doing what we're doing.
Yeah, that's awesome. I can only imagine, again, just that level of excitement, because I know you're with these guys every single day. So that's exciting for you for sure.
Yep.
Number two, what book or books are you reading right now?
I'm currently making my way through, it's in Spanish, and that's something that I've been learning since I've been living down here. But it's it's Training for Team Sports by Paco Cerullo, who he's the guy who kind of developed structured training coming out of Spain.
Okay.
Its whole book is in Spanish. So I'm making my way through that, which has been, you know, you kind of pick up a lot of tidbits within that.
Yep.
And then the other one is I'm reading Awake the Giant Within by Tony Robbins.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been kind of, I guess this year has been, I've been focusing on like personal development of, yep. you know, the psychological aspect of things. And when I kind of came across his books of Unlimited Power and Awake the Giant Within, I found them to be pretty helpful.
No, that's awesome, man. I actually just read Awaken the Giant Within this last year as well. So solid okay. read, even though it's like 25 years old now, I think.
Yeah, exactly. But it's so interesting how so many concepts, you know, are still so prevalent. And you can sense when you're reading the book why he's a billionaire.
Yeah. Yeah. He's doing all right for himself.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Number three, tell me mm-hmm. about your time in Barcelona. Just overall, what'd you think? You know, I mean, you were there 4 months, so talk to me about that a little bit.
It was amazing, and if I could do it all over again, I would do it, no questions asked. Culturally, it was amazing to be a part of the city. It was amazing to see how soccer fits within their culture, which I think is a huge aspect of the sport that not many people speak about when they're talking about, you know, how teams play, and I just think that cultural aspect is massive. And it was so motivating and inspiring for me. It was, you know, no dream was too big. And the people, obviously the people of the course that operated and developed it, they're second to none. They're unbelievable people. And so I really can't speak more highly of them.
That's awesome. So kind of a follow-up to that. Tell me about the course itself, because you were there 4 months, correct?
Yeah, so it was 4 months, and I think in total it was about 350 hours of study wow. within the course. Probably 2/3 of it was on the tactical side of the game with regards to decision-making for individual players, decision-making for line, so midfield line, defensive line, forward line. Then we'd go out and we would analyze games, whether we were going to Espanyol games, Barcelona youth games, first team Barcelona games. And then it also incorporated physical conditioning. So we had 32 hours of that by a coach, Albert Altarriba. He was he actually was a fitness coach with New York Red Bull for a couple of years.
Okay.
But he also worked with Barcelona for about 7 years, I think it was. So that was another, I guess, early on in my coaching career where the physical side is just so intertwined and it's so difficult to pull away from the whole working methodology.
Yep.
And so that's why it was, that was one of the things that was really, really interesting to me. And as well as the psychological stuff, we did 16 hours of that. So it was just like teaching a holistic training methodology, really. And then the final project culminated in us designing our own game model. And we basically had to give an hour long presentation. What's our vision for soccer?
Wow.
So it was pretty cool.
That's really cool, man. Love it. All right. Last but not least, number four, what's yep. next for Brett Utley? What else? What you got going on? What are you excited about these days? Anything?
Yeah, just gearing up for the next season. You know, there's a little bit of turnover in our team from this last season moving into next year, just kind of due to our circumstances of being the second team. I'm finished up my UEFA B license from Wales, which was an awesome experience. So I'm just kind of waiting on feedback from that. And then I'll apply to my UEFA A license within the Welsh Federation as well to hopefully do that next year. So just constantly learning, constantly trying to apply stuff, and just trying to nail down that language of Spanish, man. That's that's what I'm actually giving a presentation later today. Our goalkeeping coach is from Colombia, and I'm helping him analyze games, and he's helping me with Spanish. So he challenged me with giving a presentation in Spanish today on training methodology. So that should be interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, no, that's awesome, man. Quite the challenge, yeah. Like you said.
Yeah, but I think, you know, within the game, it can open up a lot of different doors. And, you know, half our team doesn't even speak English. So I figured it's either they learn it or what's quicker, me to learn Spanish. So I'm taking that challenge up on it. So
I had our first couple of years, we had a lot of guys from Honduras and they did
there you go.
They did not speak any English. So I got very good at my Spanglish skills and, you know.
Exactly. You got Duolingo in the pocket all the time.
I did. I did like a whole year of Duolingo. So, and then I was finally like, okay, I'm just going to focus on like anatomical terms and body parts. And once I got that figured out, at least I could get a pretty good training session out of it.
Exactly. And just doing a lot of demonstrations.
Yes. It's amazing how much you can do with some demos, some pointing, you know. That's all you need. Well, Brett, you've been awesome today, my friend. Where can my listeners find out more about you and what you have going on?
I'm on Twitter. I have a website, togsoccer.com. I haven't been too diligent with updating it this past year, but I have some stuff in the works moving forward.
Cool.
Feel free. I mean, if you were to leave a comment within there, it goes right to my email. So I'm always up for communicating with others and kind of learning from people who are a whole lot smarter than me. So by all means, reach out and looking forward to kind of helping, I guess, the whole game progress moving forward through conversation and that sort of thing. So don't be bashful. And I always try to get back to everyone as quick as I can because that's what I do. I love reaching out to people and kind of learning from other practitioners.
That's awesome. Well, Brett, thanks so much again for coming on, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and we'll speak soon.
All right, guys, that does it for this week's episode with Brett. Sincerely hope you enjoyed it. And even if you're not familiar with the concept of tactical periodization, if you work with high-level sports teams or you want to understand what high-level sports teams are doing to maximize the performance of their athletes, I would definitely recommend picking up a book or two about tactical periodization. You just learn a ton about what these great soccer minds are doing. And I think there's definitely elements of that that you can take over to virtually any field or court sport. Now, guys, obviously the new year is already in full swing. If you guys have anything you want to see in the show or from the show going forward, I would love your feedback. I'm always looking for ways to make the show a little bit more dynamic. I'm always trying to find new people. So whatever you feel like I can improve upon to help take this show to the next level, I would love to hear from you. Drop me a line, mike@robertsontrainingsystems.com. Let me know how I'm doing. Let me know what I can do better. And as always, thank you so much for your support. Love and appreciate you. And we'll be back soon with our next episode. Take care.